This quote just broke my heart in two. It makes me very sad that so many people were mean to Hassan Kim yesterday. And there's a quote in Dennis Lin's article. And he says, quote, "I can definitely say that I am human. Some mistakes do happen. Hopefully I don't have games like this going forward."
Yeah. I think right after the game, Mike Schilt said, he proved he was human for once, because he makes so few mistakes out on the field defensively that when he does, it is very unusual. And just get them all out of the way.
It's just tough because, it's always hard when the team makes a decision. We're going to move you here for your defense, and your defense is what falters. Right? We blew this one. No, we didn't blow it yet, right? Like, Hassan Kim, yeah, if I'm the manager of the San Diego Padres, he's playing shortstop today, and he's playing shortstop every day here on out. Errors are going to happen. Mistakes do happen, certainly. It sucks when it you feel like it really contributes to losing a game, but what are your better options right now? I mean, you do have 9 shortstops on the team, but I feel pretty confident that
You'd be dumb to put anyone else there.
Oh, yeah.
He's definitely your best defensive shortstop.
Which is why they made that move in the first place. Right? That's why you do it. So flush that one if you can, move on. But the guy takes it to heart. I mean, it's not like, I know he's not performing with the bat right now. OPS 612 right now. Like, he's hitting behind Manny in a
weird
spot.
He did have an RBI single yesterday. He's the one guy who did come through at the plate yesterday. We forget about that.
And it's tough because the guy literally busts his tail. And that's, I think I've said that for a while about some of the guys on the team. Like, you can lose a game if you played hard and you played right. Like, losing, it's just a part of the game of baseball. Nobody's ever gone 162-0. They never will. It's never going to happen. Ever. It's never going to happen. You're going to lose games. You have to be okay with losing some games every now and then. It's mental mistakes. It's looking maybe like you don't care. All of those things are what I really, really care about. The boomer in me, as you know, like,
no one is accusing Hassan Kim of not caring and
never
not trying.
Once. How could you? How could you? That guy gives max effort at all times.
I do see people accusing Manny. Like, yeah. I saw someone, he should be ashamed, you know. Manny absolutely cares.
He 100% cares.
He is very dedicated to the Padres, and he wants to win. He does. Now, his body language is very different than Hassan Kim's, but you can't spend your time parsing body language to determine what the motivations of everybody on the team are. I promise you, Manny really wants to win. He cares, and he works very hard, like pretty much almost everybody in that locker room does. I have no doubt about most of their motivations.
So I just saw an article, too, in the same article that I just tweeted out from Dennis Lin. Manny Machado had elbow surgery 6 months ago. Doctors have told him he might not be close to 100% until 2025. For now, he's continuing on a gradual road back to playing third base.
I wouldn't panic about that. He's better off now, though, than he was when the whole thing was absolutely shredded last year before he had the surgery. And he was still playing.
Yeah. He got
with
off.
With it shredded. Better than he was last year, I'm sure, health-wise.
He got off to a slow start at the plate last year as well. What do you do? You're not sitting him. You can lament an extension. You can lament all of this all you want. It does. It's kind of a fool's errand. Like, what are you going to do? You have him. He's here. Right. And if he feels that he can play, he's going to play. Do they bench him? Who's a better option at DH right now than Manny Machado? Is it Eggy Rosario? Is it Kyle Higashioka? Is it calling up Brett Sullivan?
Let's not be silly.
Right.
There are 29 other managers that if you said you could have Manny Machado in your lineup, no strings attached today, put him wherever you want, they'd all take him. There's not a single team, even the Dodgers, would happily put Manny Machado in their lineup. Somewhere. DH, somewhere.
Well, if he could play third, they would put him in third for Max Muncy.
Absolutely. Absolutely, so he would play over Max Muncy.
And I don't know. He did talk about how he's like, I don't think he likes DHing very much. I can't really tell. But he knows he's got a job to make. He's paid handsomely to do it. But he's like, yeah, I realized I was sitting so long. Like, you sit and wait for your turn to bat. He goes, I realize I can't do that. I can't just sit and wait for my turn to hit. He at third at 90% is better than so many guys in the big leagues. I can't wait till he comes back to play third. Hopefully that's what gets his bat going. But I don't know. I just don't know, man. I was under the assumption the surgery would get him back 100% this year. Has he ever been 100% on a baseball field since, you know, 10 years ago?
I'm just glad that I think he's going to be healthier this year, hopefully, than he was last year.
I hope so.
He was definitely not healthy at all last year.
Yeah.
He had the tennis elbow for like 2 years before that, and it was just getting worse and worse. So, yeah, it may take, I mean, just like, I think this is just doctors saying, hey, anytime you have surgery, it's going to take a while. Tommy John guys come back in 13 months, but they're not fully 100% until at least 18 months to 2 years after they have the surgery. It takes a while to fully build up everything. Doesn't mean they can't be effective and can't go out and have good seasons after they get back in 13 months, but they're not going to feel themselves like I did when I was younger until a good deal of time has gone by after surgery.
And you know, people calling for Campy to DH, then great, fine. Like, let's do that on the days he doesn't catch, but you're going to need another catcher. So you're going to have to make a move at some point, right? Grant Pauly's had 14 ABs in the big leagues. You know, he's gotten two knocks. Is it, what are we doing to his development, having him, you know, rotting on the bench? I realize he plays Manny's position at third base. You're going to have to.
Brett Sullivan's numbers in AAA are almost certainly a mirage created by the Pacific Coast League, but
he's the hottest.
I'd bring him up and let Pauly get some everyday at bats and give Brett Sullivan be an option there, either as a DH, left-handed bat, can catch, you know, be another catcher that allows Campusano to DH. That's something I would do fairly early in the season. The other thing that I would do is I would probably send Johnny Brito down, stretch him out as a starter. So as soon as you needed another starter, he'd be, you know, at five innings instead of one. And I bring up one of the other guys who had decent springs, Estrada, someone else to be a right-handed, better setup option. The Padres setup right-handers have all been shaky so far this year, up to Robert Suarez in the ninth. And you need to give at least another right-hander a try. So those are the two things I would do. I don't think it's too early to do either of those things right now. I think you can make one of those moves or both of those moves even this week if you felt like it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think at some point you're going to have to. But I don't know what necessarily this article means for Manny and when he can be back. But they keep saying
I saw 2 days ago that he's on track to be back in about a week or two and playing third base. And he's already hitting. I mean, he's in the lineup. I don't feel like his elbow is like robbed him of power. He's hit many balls very hard. You know, I don't think it keeps him from lifting the ball in the air. He hasn't lifted some of those. He has two home runs. They were monster home runs. There's nothing that Manny used to do that he can't do other than throw from third to first base right now. And he just has to do it more consistently.
I'm sorry,
that doesn't have anything to do with the injury or the surgery.
Like, I'm sorry that this take I will never get. Al tweets, if Manny's legitimately hurt, he's putting himself above the team by playing right now. That whole thing, we have kind of...
He's not hurt. He's hit two of the longest balls that the Padres have had this season.
He's just not 100%. He's in a slump, right? So, again, that whole thing, him being there not at 100% is ultimately, I know it sucks when he's slumping, but the players, the guys he plays with are like, that's my guy. If he's doing it, I need to do it.
I'd rather have Manny at 80% than Eddie Rosario at 159%.
There's no question. I don't buy that, man. I never have. I've never bought that. Like, I've never bought that whole thing of like, oh, you're being selfish by wanting to play. Selfish is me going, hey, I don't feel good. I'm tired. I'm going home. I'm out. That's selfish. Saying, hey, man, I don't feel good. I'm tired. I took a Dayquil. I popped an Adderall. I'm going to get through this thing. That's what you guys want. I may not be at my best, but that's what your team needs. How do we not get this now?
Now, if Graham Pauly were absolutely on fire and his OPS was... You know, 1,200, and you can put him in the lineup and give Manny a day off, fine. There's no one out there who has made a case at all to sit Manny right now on your team. There's no one.
Baffling.
All right, Paulie's got some headlines. Let's get to the Rundle Report.
And get things started here with our edition today, the Rundle Report.
Now tuned into the motherfucking greatest.
Welcome to the Rundle Report. With Paul Reindel.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Reindel Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a...
All right.
All right, gentlemen, we'll move a little quickly here. Big news in college hoops overnight as it's looking like John Calipari is leaving Kentucky, and he is going to be the new coach at Arkansas, finalizing a five-year deal. Eric Musselman leaving Arkansas to go coach at USC. We talked about that on Friday. And, yeah, everyone was kind of just shocked by this news because that's a big name. That's a big school. You don't typically that's a big story when a Duke, a Kansas, a Kentucky, or whatever make a coaching change. But ultimately, I think Kentucky's pretty happy with this because they were not happy with John Calipari over the last few years. A couple of first-round exits, including this year losing to 14-seeded, I believe, Oakland. And the problem was that Kentucky didn't want to pay him. I think it was like $31 or $33 million buyout if they were to fire him. They don't have to pay him if another school wants to hire him. Oh. So they're like, no, please don't go.
I mean, you know, so this is a game of coaching musical chairs in which so far every school has ended up probably for the better. SMU gets Andy Enfield from USC as they move to the ACC. That's a good hire for them. USC gets Eric Musselman from Arkansas.
Great hire.
That's a good hire from them.
Damn it.
Arkansas gets John Calipari from Kentucky. That's a good hire for them.
Yep.
And Kentucky can have their pick of pretty much anyone they want. I've heard Nate Oates' name from Alabama.
Dan
who they'll probably be very excited about. Like, everybody's a winner until maybe the school that Kentucky steals their coach from, and then they're going to probably end up being the loser in this game of coaching musical chairs. But, yeah, I guess national championship, three Final Fours doesn't buy you as much goodwill. And I think Calipari also, you could hear him getting frustrated. He's not handled the changes in college basketball quite as well as, like,
sure,
a Brian Dutcher has, rolling with the punches as much. He's been bristling with it, and he'll have to get over that at Arkansas because the rules are the same at Arkansas as they are at Kentucky. So good luck. We'll see how it works out for everybody.
Yeah, national championship in 2012. He's been to four Final Fours. Those were in his first six seasons there.
I'm sure at least one of them was vacated. I'm just guessing.
He went 4-10 and 1-23 with the Wildcats. And see you later. All right. Next up, this absolutely could have and should have been a doo-doo this if we had more time earlier in the show. But I want to shout out Jillian Albiotti. I hope I'm saying that correctly. She goes to Cal State San Marcos, and she plays softball. And this weekend, she played baseball as well. Pretty awesome story. I was reading here.
Baseball
in the
paper. Men's division, the college, Division II college
she
baseball
the first,
team.
First woman to play baseball at the D2 level. And so she hit a walk-off, or I don't know if she hit the grand slam, but there was a walk-off grand slam for their softball game. And she changed uniforms, sprinted down to the baseball field, and shortly after arriving, she was in the game. They were getting
that's amazing.
They were losing, and she got like 10 or she showed up in the ninth inning of the baseball game, and they were down big, and she got about 10 warm-up pitches, and the coach said, "You're in." And she went in there and pitched. It was really cool. I got a little CSU San Marcos posted a little video of her on the mound.
Does she want to play for the Tier 1s this Sunday?
Does she have two other games? Does she do three games in one day? Well, looks like she's pretty hard.
Yeah, absolutely. She has played baseball her entire life. And I want to bring up these numbers that I saw earlier. When she was in high school, I mean, she was a legit, she was a stud pitcher. Where am I at? She went to Anaheim High School, and on the baseball team in 2022, they went 12-0. She went 12-0. Career record of 20-0 on the mound with a 1.68 ERA. And then she also hits 360 as well.
Good
to play.
God.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Pretty cool. All right. And then finally.
Or was she being selfish for playing in both games
in
the same day?
Maybe. Finally. Do you know where Kyle, Texas is?
You know, I don't. I know Kyle Field is at Texas A&M, but I don't know. I'm unfamiliar with Kyle, Texas.
A&M is in Austin?
A&M is in College Station.
College Station.
UT is in Austin.
UT, okay.
College Station's down south.
Dump.
That's not good.
Kyle is south of Austin,
I believe. Of Austin.
North of San Antonio, south of Austin.
All right, well, Kyle, Texas is trying to set a Guinness World Record for the largest same-name gathering. I didn't know that was a record already. Turns out it is.
Same-name gathering.
It was set in 2017. 2,325 people named Ivan showed up to a gathering in Bosnia and another city I'm not going to even try to pronounce. So 2,325 is the number. And Kyle is calling for any and all Kyles to show up to Kyle, Texas on May 18th at 1 o'clock. It's part of the Kyle Fair. And they want anybody that is named Kyle to show up as they attempt to break that number of 2,325 Ivans with at least 2,326 Kyles.
So if there was a Ben, California, all the Bens would...
Who's like the most famous Kyle? Like, is there like a signature Kyle to get? I'm trying to think of the Kyles we know. We've got Kyle Glazer. Who...
Love Kyle Glazer.
Yeah.
Kyle Rudolph.
Let's see. The most famous Kyles.
Kyle Kraska, TV guy.
Yeah. Your guys.
Kyle Busch is a
Lowry,
NASCAR driver.
Kyle Chandler, actor. Kyle Busch.
He was in Friday Night Lights, right? Mm-hmm. Kyle Chandler.
Kyle Korver. Kyle. Not a lot of Kyles.
I've got
Kyle
a cousin
Mooney.
Named Kyle. Well, y'all be heading to Kyle, Texas right now.
I doubt it. Who's paying my way? I'm not just going to be like, all right, babe, I'm driving.
You're not named Kyle.
I'm driving to Steve, Oregon.
You don't want to be a part of the Guinness record?
No, I'm driving this. Where are you going? I'm driving to Stephen, Oregon this weekend. For what? They're doing a thing. For what is it? Everybody with the name Stephen shows up and we just hang out. All right. Have fun. Okay.
They've tried to do this before. Last year they had 1,490 Kyles show up to the event. They're going to need about 1,000 more.
So are we going to get Kyle Higashioka out there? Is he going to miss a game for the...
Better. I think so.
Better not.
Oh, the boomer would come out in Woods.
The chat comes up with Kyle Long from the Bears. Kyle MacLachlan, he was Twin Peaks, right? Actor?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Very good actor.
Not a lot of Kyles that come to mind, though, as far as big famous.
I can't believe you didn't do the Morgan Wallen story. That's what I really wanted to hear.
I mean, it's not a good story. I don't even like giving him... breath.
Kyle Petty. Steve Smith comes up with that one.
He's going to be on Kyle's the rest of the day.
Yeah, he is.
All right. We can save
Daryl him. Kyle. Oh, no, that doesn't count.
We can save Morgan Wallen.
Maybe don't do this tomorrow.
100%.
A national championship game tonight. A couple quick thoughts. Paul keeps asking me, is Zucon going to cover? They're going to cover? They're not going to cover?
You know, I don't know.
Keeps asking me. I don't know either, Paul. If I did, we wouldn't have to do this job at all.
It's that I think I'm set in my ways, and then I read one little note about Purdue, and I go, well, now I don't know what to do anymore.
Kyle Schwarber.
That's what they want, by the way, Paulie. They want you to be unsure. That is exactly what they want.
Yeah, I want to ask Woods about Friday Night Seals game as well. When I come back.
It's phenomenal.
Ben and Woods after traffic on 97.3 The Fan. All right, Woods, you got more work to do because with their win on Friday night, correct me if I'm wrong, the Seals clinched a home playoff game.
Correct.
Give me some details on the win and what's coming up now for the San Diego Seals.
It's like the quietest, most peaceful, non-chippy game I think I've ever called.
Panther City.
Yeah, I mean, they played great.
Which we've determined is Fort Worth, Texas.
Correct.
Okay. Where's Panther City?
They were 7-7 going into the game. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. 500 team. They had like 5-1 goal losses, though. So
they're like the Padres.
The Padres of the NLL.
The NLL.
And their goalie was our old goalie. Nick Demude, one of them, and he was great. And they battled it out, and finally, man, at the end, they just unleashed. Trevor Baptiste, who is the face-off specialist, won 25 of 27 face-offs
and
scored 2 goals. It was incredible. It was a great night. So many fans out there, people are stoked. So, yeah, we got a home playoff game. We'll figure out who, seeding and all that. We have one more regular season game on the 19th.
So one more game, then the playoffs.
Yeah, one more game, and then the playoffs. I'm super excited. It was electric. And we scored 4 goals in like the last minute to put it on ice. So it was pretty dope.
By the way, speaking of the playoffs, and I'm sure Craig will have more on this, soccer's lost on Saturday on the road. So they play tonight and they got to win twice. They got to win the game and then they got to win an if necessary mini game, like a 1-quarter game to advance. So they're going to be out in the first round, which would be a big upset against the Texas Outlaws. They lost 6-4 on Saturday night. So good luck to the Sockers as well. But I think most of our attention tonight will be on the NCAA championship game from State Farm Stadium. What?
False.
False.
Yes. My attention will be on the San Diego Padres.
Around the country. Attention will be on the NCAA championship game.
And I'm not an old. I'll have two screens going.
That's smart. Yeah, have both of them working at the same time.
How does one do that?
UConn, Purdue. I can watch on my phone. I did that yesterday. I watched the women's basketball on my phone. Padres on the TV for the second half of the women's basketball
game. Gotta help you out, man.
Wasn't that hard.
I didn't want to watch the Padres on my phone, and I don't want to watch the basketball on my phone.
So, Pauly, you and I were trying to guess.
Yeah.
We tried to guess... What would the line be if it was UConn against Purdue?
Which is the matchup everybody wanted.
And we both said we thought 6.5 sounded right.
Yeah.
I think it opened at 6, actually. But now it's gone up.
It's gone up to 7.
UConn by 7. So we were pretty spot on our prediction of what the line would be. Of course, on Saturday, both Purdue and UConn won their national semifinal games. And, you know, it kind of went as you'd expect. Alabama gave UConn a game, at least for a while, but eventually UConn pulled away and won by double digits again.
I was sweating that one just because I had UConn minus 11.5, I think it was, and they were just hovering around 8 to 10 point lead the entire second half.
Way sweatier than it needed to be.
Come on, pull away, pull away. And then they did.
And then kind of clock struck midnight on 11th seed NC State, Purdue. Just too much to handle with Zach Edey. 20 points, 12 rebounds. They won 63-50. So, yeah, this is the game pretty much everybody wanted, just like in the women's side. You get in the game that the best player against the best team. The best player, Zach Edey, against the best team in UConn. On the women's side,
the best two teams all season long.
Yep.
All year.
On the women's side, it was the best team that won out, and I fully believe it's going to be the best team that wins out tonight for the UConn Huskies back-to-back titles. They just take no prisoners. Danny Hurley has got that team locked in when it comes time for March Madness, and they don't only refuse to lose. They refuse to even let it be close at the end.
Well, before Saturday's game, they hadn't won by any less than 15. And then they won by 14, so it's still, I mean, they are just bodying opponents. And, yeah, I think at minus 7, I think I'll still have to ride with UConn tonight.
Just going to be watching the pod try to hit with runners in scoring position. I can't do both. I'm ADD pretty bad. Like, watching a basketball game and a baseball game at the same time would make me insane, all whilst wrangling two absolute lunatics at home, both of which are now sick. So it's like, there's no way. I'm going, you guys fill me in on the game tomorrow. I'm watching the pods and doing dad work. That's it. That's all I can handle. I bet on the game, though. But I will not be watching it.
And I assume you went with UConn as well?
I did.
I mean,
gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, GEGE00466.
The run will end at some time. They will not win every NCAA game the rest of my lifetime by double digits. So at some point, it's going to end. Is the chances that it will... He took UConn, too. Does Purdue have the best chance of anyone yet of ending that run? Probably better than San Diego State did in the championship last year, to be honest.
Yeah.
San Diego State didn't have Zach Edey. They had Nathan Mensah, but they didn't have Zach Edey. So, to me, though... I think Edey is, I mean, he's an outstanding college basketball player, but I don't know that he can overcome everything that's going against Purdue in this game. They'll need to shoot lights out. I mean, Alabama shot lights out in the first half,
which is weird.
They still couldn't come close to beating UConn.
Yeah, they were like 60% from three.
No, more than that, 8 of 11 in the first half, and they were down 6.
Yeah, and teams don't typically shoot well in big football stadiums like that, at least from deep. And
true,
you're going to be at State Fart Stadium, so yeah, I'll take UConn in this one. It's been a fun tournament, though.
All right, Woods, you want to talk Padres? You want to talk tonight's game, the one you'll actually be watching? Will we see a different lineup from Mike Schilt? He hinted that it's at least being thought about, and we'll play that audio and discuss whether Jackson Merrill should be promoted, as it were, from the bottom of the order to the top of the order when we come back with more Ben and Woods. Final segment coming up on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. San Diego Legion are back this Sunday. Going to take on the NOLA Gold at Snapdragon Stadium. Get your rugby tickets now at sdlegion.com or call fast, 833-288-0973. Win a pair. Second caller going to win a pair of Legion Gold tickets this Sunday at Snapdragon, 833-288-0973. Good luck to you from all of us here at 97.3 The Fan. All right, we're going to check traffic, and then I want to get into Mike Shildt and what he said about Jackson Merrill and his potential to move up in the Padres lineup after a 4-for-4 performance yesterday in San Francisco. That's coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. I think one of the most surprising things about Mike Shildt so far is that 12 games into the season, there has been zero deviation in the first six players in his batting order. They have been exactly the same every single game. I have not checked every other lineup in baseball. Is that there is not a single other team that has had the same top six in their order every single game so far this season, other than the San Diego Padres.
Maybe.
I doubt it.
Dodgers, maybe?
Well,
you
I mean,
you don't mess with that much.
Every game has a catcher in their lineup. Every team has a catcher, and the catcher always, so if the catcher has to be one of the last three batters.
Why?
Well, if you're going to have the same six, because no team plays the same catcher every game.
The Dodgers don't do that.
So the Dodgers can't, because Will Smith gets a day off occasionally because he's a catcher. So they can't do it because they have the catcher as one of their better players. So the only way you can do it is if you have the catcher in the bottom third of your order, which the Padres do. And I've had the exact same line. Most lineups, they have guys that platoon around. And the Padres do as well. They've had Azokar move in a couple of games, and they've switched to third baseman a couple of times. But every single time, it's happened in the bottom third of the order. Same lineup every day. Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis Jr., Jake Cronenworth, Manny Machado, Ha-Sung Kim, Jurickson Profar. You'd think they're like 12-0 just based on the consistency there. Why change a good thing? The fact that they're only 5-7, though, does make you wonder, could there be a better combination? And it's not like the top of the order hasn't struggled in many of those games in, you know, putting together rallies and runs on the board. So is it time for Mike Shildt to make a change at the top of the order? And what should he do if he is going to make that change? Because we've already talked about how you're kind of limited if you want to split up your righties. You have to have Jake be your third hitter just so there's not three righties in a row in that situation.
I don't know what I would do, to be honest. If given the pen and the paper today and said, all right, smart guy, you do it. Right? I don't know what I would do differently. You know, it's not like when a guy makes a case to move up in the lineup, you know, a guy that's hitting well in Jackson Merrill's case, you also have to run the risk of moving him up and messing with the comfortability of hitting ninth and knowing he's hitting ninth and doing the job that a nine hole hitter does. And it's different. You get different pitches in different spots. If I'm a pitcher and I know that this kid has good bat to ball skills, but you know, he's probably not going to take me deep. I pitch him a little bit differently than I do if he's in a different spot. I don't know, man. It's not as simple as a spark by changing the lineup is going to make one bit of difference. I don't know about the personnel on this team, Ben, that tells me this is the optimal lineup for this team. I loved Xander in the top, because I was like, it's going to be harder to hit into double plays, at least in the first inning, you know, and Manny batting four with Ha-Sung Kim behind him, who's also not hitting well. That's kind of tough, because why throw anybody a strike right now? You know, like, why make them chase? Everyone's going to start to press. They're going to do too much. It's the nature of the game. I don't know how I would jigger it much other than putting Toddy at the top. You know, and that's something we've talked about. He said that he likes to do it. They did it in spring training, but not being able to trust Xander essentially has earned him the leadoff spot in the order. I don't know if that's the best way to do it either, right? Like, I don't trust you, so I'm going to hit you first, right? Like, is that the best way? I have no idea. Toddy in the three hole, maybe. Jake in the two. Xander in the one.
So I'm looking back right now, because I remember when Fernando Tatis Jr. made his debut back in 2019. He was, Andy Green had him in the sixth hole. And I thought, but pretty soon he moved his way up into the lineup, right? He was doing really well. He was in the sixth hole for about 3 to 4 weeks before they moved him up, and they started batting him leadoff for a while. And since then, you know, he's obviously been near the top of the order, but they still gave him 3 to 4 weeks near the bottom at the sixth, not ninth, but sixth in the order before making the change. Is 12 games too soon to move Jackson Merrill up? Because this is the lineup that I, if you could promise me that Jackson Merrill is just going to be Jackson Merrill, take the same at-bats that we've been seeing, which is selective, hitting the ball hard. He's walked a couple of times, stole a base the other day this weekend. Things that a leadoff hitter does well, Jackson Merrill seems to do well. I would go like this. Jackson Merrill, Tatis, Machado, Cronenworth, Bogarts, and then I would go with Jurickson.
Profar. That's not bad.
And then that's a 1-7 that's got some lefty-righty balance and doesn't have Xander, who has yet to get going and yet to show any extra base. Moves him down a little bit in the order. Gives Manny the protection of a hotter
Cronenworth.
Jake Cronenworth yep. right now out of the four slot. But keeps Jake's speed, if he's on, limits a little bit of the worry about Xander grounding into double plays. You can put Jake in motion a little bit with his speed out there. He's not super fast, but he's a good runner. I think that would be the lineup that I might try next. But again, you are risking messing with Jackson Merrill by putting him in leadoff spots tough for anybody. Even veterans sometimes struggle in the leadoff spot when they don't have experience with it. But
bro, my guy going from a 9-hole to a leadoff hitter in 12 games would be...
It's essentially just moving one spot in the order, though.
It is.
It's one spot in the order.
This is Jackson Merrill.
After the first at bat of the game, it's the exact same thing. You're pretty much batting right where you were when it comes around at the bottom or the top. It's one spot in the order, and you're just getting that extra at-bat. And right now, I'd rather have Jackson Merrill getting that extra at-bat than anyone, especially a guy who's getting so many singles and could be on base a ton, you know, for then Tatis and Machado and Cronenworth coming up behind him.
I don't think it's a stupid idea by any stretch. I think it's a pipe dream, but I've been wrong before.
I mean, I think Mike Shildt would have to play the psychological game. Here's what Mike Shildt had to say when he was pressed a little bit by the reporters after the game yesterday about, is it time to move Jackson Merrill up in the lineup?
Gosh, man, what good at-bats. What an approach. He's clearly understanding what he's doing in every situation. He's taking the right at-bats. He's got a good mentality. I loved all the at-bats. I loved the at-bat in the ninth. And I loved him having ability to go grab that bag to put himself in scoring position, tie the game. He played the game right in every phase, all series.
With as much contact, hard contact that he's made, he only has two RBIs this season. I know you talked about liking the first six in your lineup. Any thought maybe soon if he keeps doing this?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's going to tell us when he's ready to move up for sure, and he's definitely making a case.
All right. Has he told him enough that he's ready to move up? He's making the case.
I said it earlier. If you move him out of the nine spot where he's doing really well and comfortable and everything else as a rookie, you know, been in the league for 12 days, who hits ninth? You know, having him at the
bottom? Tyler Wade.
Okay. Well, having him at the bottom is essentially, once you get through the first part, right? That's your kind of your back-to-back guy. You know what I mean? Like, I've always liked doing a good hitter last as well, a good-ish, good enough hitter. What I don't want to get to again is that 7, 8, 9, where you're like, I'm going to go to the
bat. I know, but Jurickson's now 7 in my new lineup.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And Campy is 8, or Campy is 7, and Jurickson's 8. That's a good lineup there. Dan in the chat says, too much pressure on Merrill.
He's adapted to every bet.
Maybe you're right. I think Shildt would have to play the psychology game and go, Jackson, we're actually not changing you in the order. We're just going to get you an extra at-bat to start the game.
Right.
You're still ninth, yeah. But we're going to start with our nine hitter. We're going 9-1-2 to lead off the game instead of 1-2-3.
It's
the same lineup.
Yeah, I say that.
Except you're starting with your nine hitter instead of your one hitter. And after the first at-bat, it literally is no different. There's no rule that says, oh, the leadoff hitter comes up first every inning. It doesn't work that way. We're talking the one at-bat. Who do you want to get that at-bat right now? I want Jackson Merrill to get that at-bat. So you have to just psychologically go, don't do anything different. This is you're hitting in the nine hole, and we're just starting with the nine hitter in the first inning instead of the one hitter.
He's not six. Bo would buy that. He's not 6 years old. It's totally, totally different. The job of a nine-hole hitter is way different.
It's not.
It's the same
spot in the lineup, essentially.
It's not.
It is.
One is one and one is nine. That's like saying noon is the same time as 6 a.m. It's the same thing.
The lineup, we call it a lineup, but it's not. It's a circle. It's not a line.
It is a circle.
It's a circle.
Again.
And it's like a clock. What's the closest on the clock to 12? 11. He's in the 11 spot, right next to the 12, which would be the leadoff spot. They're basically the same. It's 11:59 p.m., 12 p.m. Make him the leadoff hitter.
Well, you're basically saying you can just put nine names in a hat and draw.
No. I am keeping the lineup exactly the same. I'm just starting with number nine instead of number one. It's just starting on a little different place on the circle. I am starting the 1 hour early on circular 9 hour clock. I'm starting 1 hour early.
He might be young enough to believe
your BS.
That's
what I'm thinking.
He might be young enough to believe your BS. Right? What?
Oh, you're not the leadoff hitter. You're the number nine hitter, and we're starting with number nine.
But you are
just the ones.
Just the ones.
Just the ones.
Look, I don't care. I just want them to win baseball games. They need to play well against the Cubs. We haven't talked about the Cubs much and kind of what we're facing this week. Give me the start times again. Why are they weird? Do we know?
So, is it national TV game or something? 6:40 is normal.
Tonight.
That's normal. 7:05 is, I believe, get out of national windows tomorrow. And start later, I think. I'm not sure why it's 7:05.
I think they're on... They're somewhere national.
Or they are
tomorrow.
National window tomorrow. That's why it's later.
So TBS?
They're the second game on TBS or something.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday, 3:40. And I don't know this, so I'm making things up as I go. But I like to think that I can figure these things out. 3:40 is the compromise. The Cubs have to fly out after the game, but the Padres don't have. They've got a day off on Thursday, and they're just driving up to L.A. So there's no reason for the Padres to rush. They'd probably rather have a night game. The Cubs would rather have a day game, and the Padres said, all right, let's compromise, and we'll make it at 3:40 to give more people a chance to get there, but you Cubs, you can still fly out before it's midnight at the end of the night.
Yeah, so they are TBS tomorrow. Now, does TBS mean that it takes away Don and Mutt, or is it both?
I don't know that Don does every TBS game.
Will we get the Padres broadcast and there's a TBS broadcast? Or is it like Sunday Night Baseball where
they're off?
They are off. That's the national game.
I think only ESPN is the one where you still have the local. ESPN during the week is the one where you have both. But I feel like the FS1s and the TBSs do supersede the local broadcasts and the Sunday Night Baseball. So I would think tomorrow night will then be a TBS game.
All right,
Pots, that's TBD.
You got you on the mound tonight. Javier Assad is throwing against us. He's 1-0 this year. He is not a super hard thrower. He does throw his fastball.
I was surprised how good his numbers were.
He's got
last
really
year.
Good numbers, yeah. But he's fastball slider guy, Benny. He throws a curve and change. He doesn't throw them a ton. So again, fastball slider guy. He's not overpowering. Yu Darvish has pitched really well against Chicago in limited work.
He's facing his old team.
2-1. His ERA is 1.71. He's been great this year. Need that to continue certainly, and got to find a way to jump on a young pitcher.
You've got your ace who started out well going up against not a bad pitcher, but this is one to me. As I said, this week is a dicey one for the Padres. You're two games under 500. Got the hot Cubs and the Dodgers for six. You cannot have a 1-5 week. It would be really good to start with a win tonight when you've got the advantage and you've got the hot pitcher going. Set the tone for the week. Feels like it's an important game to start the week. They're all important, but it's like yesterday would have been a bonus. I said this earlier. This was the Padres 5 going against the Cy Young runner-up from last year. If the Padres had won that, you feel like you're stealing one. Now, obviously, they should have won it based on how the game played out, and they let it get away. But that's a game you steal. You don't expect to win a game like that. This is one where you have to kind of hold serve. You're at home. You got Yu Darvish on the mound. You need to take this one to start the series, and then you've got two chances to win the series against the Cubs on Tuesday and Wednesday with some good pitchers going. And hopefully you win that series, because you know it's going to be tough this weekend with the bottom of your rotation against the Dodgers. It's just going to be tough. It is. So winning this series against the Cubs to me is pretty important over the next 3 days.
No doubt, man. No doubt. It's got to get this thing going. Got to get the ship righted. Got to eat well at home. You know, these guys got to come out hungry tonight, and it's time for everybody to get going. Top of the order. I mean, you know, you can only say it so much. We need those guys to carry us. We need the stars to star here in San Diego, like they do in other places. And I realize, man, across the league, there's some guys that are scuffling right now that are highly paid. It's 12 games in, but, you know, to erase those memories of last year, if you don't want to be known as that team, then only you can change it. Like, only you can change the perception of you, right? And doing that means coming out tonight and putting the wood to this guy.
And don't forget, Wednesday's the Manny Machado home run bobblehead giveaway presented by Quetta Ortho to wrap up just a quick three-game homestand, and then it's off to L.A. to face the Dodgers. We are off for the rest of our day. Annie and Elston standing by. They will come up next. Great job by our executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindl. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Monday from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody. San Diego Legion are back this Sunday. Going to take on the NOLA Gold at Snapdragon Stadium. Get your rugby tickets now at sdlegion.com or call fast, 833-288-0973. Win a pair. Second caller going to win a pair of Legion Gold tickets this Sunday at Snapdragon, 833-288-0973. Good luck to you from all of us here at 97.3 The Fan. All right, we're going to check traffic. And then I want to get into Mike Schilt and what he said about Jackson Merrill and his potential to move up in the Padres lineup after a 4-for-4 performance yesterday in San Francisco. That's coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. I think one of the most surprising things about Mike Schilt so far is that 12 games into the season, there has been zero deviation in the first six players in his batting order. They have been exactly the same every single game. I have not checked every other lineup in baseball. Is that there is not a single other team that has had the same top six in their order every single game so far this season, other than the San Diego Padres.
Maybe.
I doubt it.
Dodgers, maybe?
Well,
you
mean,
you don't mess with that much.
Every game has a catcher in their lineup. Every team has a catcher, and the catcher always, so if the catcher has to be one of the last three batters.
Why?
Well, if you're going to have the same top six. Because no team plays the same catcher every game.
The Dodgers then don't do that.
So the Dodgers can't. Because Will Smith gets a day off occasionally because he's a catcher. So they can't do it because they have the catcher as one of their better players. So the only way you can do it is if you have the catcher in the bottom third of your order, which the Padres do. And I've had the exact same line. Most lineups, they have guys that platoon around. And the Padres do as well. Yeah. They've had Azokar move in a couple of games, and they've switched to third baseman a couple of times. But every single time, it's happened in the bottom third of the order. Same lineup every day. Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis Jr., Jake Cronenworth, Manny Machado, Ha-Sung Kim, Jurickson Profar. You'd think they're like 12-0, just based on the consistency there. Why change a good thing? The fact that they're only 5-7, though, does make you wonder, could there be a better combination? And it's not like the top of the order hasn't struggled in many of those games in, you know, putting together rallies and runs on the board. So is it time for Mike Schilt to make a change at the top of the order? And what should he do if he is going to make that change? Because we've already talked about how you're kind of limited if you want to split up your righties. You have to have Jake be your third hitter just so there's not three righties in a row in that situation.
I don't know what I would do, to be honest, if given the pen and the paper today and said, all right, smart guy, you do it. Right? I don't know what I would do differently. You know, it's not like when a guy makes a case to move up in the lineup, you know, a guy that's hitting well in Jackson Merrill's case, you also have to run the risk of moving him up and messing with the comfortability of hitting ninth and knowing he's hitting ninth and doing the job that a nine hole hitter does. And it's different. You get different pitches in different spots. If I'm a pitcher and I know that this kid has good bat to ball skills, but you know, he's probably not going to take me deep. I pitch him a little bit differently than I do if he's in a different spot. I don't know, man. It's not as simple as a spark by changing the lineup is going to make one bit of difference. I don't know about the personnel on this team, Ben, that tells me this is the optimal lineup for this team. I loved Xander in the top because I was like, it's going to be harder to hit into double plays, at least in the first inning, you know, and Manny batting four with Ha-Sung Kim behind him, who's also not hitting well. That's kind of tough because why throw anybody a strike right now? You know, like why make them chase? Everyone's going to start to press. They're going to do too much. It's the nature of the game. I don't know how I would jigger it much other than putting Toddy at the top, you know, and that's something we've talked about. He said that he likes to do it. They did it in spring training, but not being able to trust Xander essentially has earned him the leadoff spot in the order. I don't know if that's the best way to do it either, right? Like, I don't trust you, so I'm going to hit you first, right? Like, is that the best way? I have no idea. Toddy in the three hole, maybe. Jake in the two. Xander in the one.
So I'm looking back right now because I remember when Fernando Tatis Jr. made his debut back in 2019. He was, Andy Green had him in the sixth hole. And I thought, but pretty soon he moved his way up into the lineup, right? He was doing really well. He was in the sixth hole for about 3 to 4 weeks before they moved him up, and they started batting him leadoff for a while. And since then, you know, he's obviously been near the top of the order, but they still gave him 3 to 4 weeks near the bottom at the sixth, not ninth, but sixth in the order before making the change. Is 12 games too soon to move Jackson Merrill up? Because this is the lineup that if you could promise me that Jackson Merrill is just going to be Jackson Merrill, take the same at-bats that we've been seeing, which is selective, hitting the ball hard. He's walked a couple of times, stole a base the other day this weekend. Things that a leadoff hitter does well, Jackson Merrill seems to do well. I would go like this. Jackson Merrill, Tatis, Machado, Cronenworth, Bogarts, and then I would go with Jurickson.
Profar. That's not bad.
And then that's a 1-7 that's got some lefty-righty balance and doesn't have Xander, who has yet to get going and yet to show any extra base, moves him down a little bit in the order. Gives Manny the protection of a hotter
Cronenworth.
Jake Cronenworth, yep, right now out of the four slot, but keeps Jake's speed if he's on, limits a little bit of the worry about Xander grounding into double plays. You can put Jake in motion a little bit with his speed out there. He's not super fast, but he's a good runner. I think that would be the lineup that I might try next. But again, you are risking messing with Jackson Merrill by putting him in a leadoff spot. Tough for anybody. Even veterans sometimes struggle in the leadoff spot when they don't have experience with it. But
bro, my guy going from a nine hole to a leadoff hitter in 12 games would be...
It's essentially just moving one spot in
it
the
is.
Order, though.
It is.
It's one spot in the order.
This is Jackson Merrill.
After the first at-bat of the game, it's the exact same thing. You're pretty much batting right where you were when it comes around at the bottom or the top. It's one spot in the order, and you're just getting that extra at-bat. And right now, I'd rather have Jackson Merrill getting that extra at-bat than anyone, especially a guy who's getting so many singles and could be on base a ton, you know, for then Tatis and Machado and Cronenworth coming up behind him.
I don't think it's a stupid idea by any stretch. I think it's a pipe dream, but I've been wrong before.
I mean, I think Mike Shildt would have to play the psychological game. Here's what Mike Shildt had to say when he was pressed a little bit by the reporters after the game yesterday about, is it time to move Jackson Merrill up in the lineup?
Gosh, man, what good at bats. What an approach. He's clearly understanding what he's doing in every situation. He's taking the right at bats. He's got a good mentality. I loved all the at bats. I loved the at bat in the ninth. And I loved him having ability to go grab that bag to put himself in scoring position, tie the game. He played the game right in every phase, all series.
With as much hard contact that he's made, he only has 2 RBIs this season. I know you talked about liking the first 6 in your lineup. Any thought maybe soon if he keeps doing this?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's going to tell us when he's ready to move up for sure, and he's definitely making a case.
All right. Has he told him enough that he's ready to move up? He's making the case.
I said it earlier. If you move him out of the 9 spot where he's doing really well and comfortable and everything else as a rookie, you know, been in the league for 12 days, who hits 9th? You know, having him at the
bottom? Tyler Wade.
Okay. Well, having him at the bottom is essentially, once you get through the first part, right, that's your kind of your back-to-back guy. You know what I mean? Like, I've always liked doing a good hitter last as well, a good-ish, good enough hitter. What I don't want to get to, again, is that 7, 8, 9, where you're like, I'm going to go to the
I know, but if Jurickson's now 7 in my new lineup.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And Campy is 8, or Campy is 7 and Jurickson's 8. That's a good lineup there. Dan in the chat says, too much pressure on Merrill.
He's adopted to every bet.
Maybe you're right. I think Schilt would have to play the psychology game and go, Jackson, we're actually not changing you in the order. We're just going to get you an extra at-bat to start the game.
Right.
You're still 9th, yeah. But we're going to start with our 9 hitter. We're
He's
gonna
like,
go 9.
Really?
We're
okay.
going 9. We're going 9-1-2 to lead off the game instead of 1-2-3.
So it's the I hit
it's
first?
It's the same lineup.
Yeah, I say that.
Except you're starting with your 9 hitter instead of your 1 hitter. And after the first at-bat, it literally is no different. There's no rule that says, oh, the leadoff hitter comes up first every inning. It doesn't work that way. We're talking the one at-bat. Who do you want to get that at-bat right now? I want Jackson Merrill to get that at-bat. So you have to just psychologically go, don't do anything different. This is you're hitting in the 9 hole, and we're just starting with the 9 hitter in the first inning instead of the 1 hitter.
He's That's not the 6. Same lineup. He's not 6. Bo would buy that. He's not 6 years old. It's totally, totally different. The job of a 9-hole hitter is way different.
It's not.
It's the same
spot in the lineup, essentially.
It's not.
It is.
One is 1 and one is 9. That's like saying noon is the same time as 6 a.m. It's the same thing.
The lineup, we call it a lineup, but it's not. It's a circle. It's not a line.
It is a circle.
It's a circle.
Again.
And it's like a clock. What's the closest on the clock to 12? 11. He's in the 11 spot, right next to the 12, which would be the leadoff spot. They're basically the same. It's 11:59 p.m., 12 p.m. Make him the leadoff
hitter. Well, you're basically saying you can just put 9 names in a hat and draw.
No. I am keeping the lineup exactly the same. I'm just starting with number 9 instead of number 1. It's just starting on a little different place on the circle. I am starting the 1 hour early on circular 9 hour clock. I'm starting 1 hour early.
He might be young enough to believe
That's
your BS.
That's what I'm thinking.
He might be young enough to believe your BS. Right? What?
Oh, you're not the leadoff hitter. You're the number 9 hitter, and we're starting with number 9.
But you are
just the once.
Just the once.
Just the once.
Look, I don't care. I just want them to win baseball games. They need to play well against the Cubs. We haven't talked about the Cubs much and kind of what we're facing this week. Give me the start times again. Why are they weird? Do we know?
So
is it national TV game or something?
6:40 is normal.
Tonight.
That's
yep.
normal. 7:05 is, I believe, get out of national windows tomorrow. And start later, I think. I'm not sure why it's 7:05.
I think they're on... They're somewhere national
Or they are
tomorrow.
National window tomorrow. That's why it's later.
So TBS?
They're the second game on TBS or something.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday, 3:40. And I don't know this, so I'm making things up as I go. But I like to think that I can figure these things out. 3:40 is the compromise. The Cubs have to fly out after the game, but the Padres don't have. They've got a day off on Thursday, and they're just driving up to L.A. So there's no reason. There's no reason for the Padres to rush. They'd probably rather have a night game. The Cubs would rather have a day game. And the Padres said, "All right, let's compromise, and we'll make it at 3:40 to give more people a chance to get there." But you Cubs, you can still fly out before it's midnight at the end of the night.
Yeah. So they are TBS tomorrow. Now, does TBS mean that it takes away Don and Mutt, or is it both?
I don't know that Don does every TBS game.
No, I just mean...
Just will take
we get
away the
will
local
we get the
broadcast.
Padres broadcast and there's a TBS broadcast? Or is it like Sunday Night Baseball where...
They're off.
They are off. That's the national game.
I think only ESPN is the one where you still have the local... ESPN during the week is the one where you have both. But I feel like the FS1s and the TBSs do supersede the local broadcasts and the
TBS
Sunday Night Baseball.
Tomorrow night.
So I would think tomorrow night will then be a TBS game.
All right,
but that's TBD.
You got you on the TBS. You got you on the mound tonight. Javier Assad is throwing against us. He's 1-0 this year. He is not a super hard thrower. He does throw his fastball.
I was surprised how good his numbers were.
He's got
last
really
year.
Good numbers, yeah. But he's fastball slider guy, Benny. He throws a curve and change. He doesn't throw them a ton. So again, fastball slider guy. He's not overpowering. Yu Darvish has pitched really well against Chicago in limited work.
He's facing his old team.
2-1. His ERA is 1.71. He's been great this year. Need that to continue certainly. And got to find a way to jump on a young pitcher.
You've got your ace who started out well going up against not a bad pitcher, but this is one to me. As I said, this week is. a dicey one for the Padres. You're two games under 500. You got the hot Cubs and the Dodgers for six. You cannot have a 1-5 week. It would be really good to start with a win tonight when you've got the advantage and you've got the hot pitcher going. Set the tone for the week. Feels like it's an important game to start the week. They're all important, but it's like yesterday would have been a bonus. I said this earlier. This was the Padres 5 going against the Cy Young runner-up right. from last year. If the Padres had won that, you feel like you're stealing one. Now, obviously, they should have won it based on how the game played out, and they let it get away. But that's a game you steal. You don't expect to win a game like that. This is one where you have to kind of hold serve. You're at home. You got Yu Darvish on the mound. You need to take this one to start the series, and then you've got two chances to win the series against the Cubs on Tuesday and Wednesday with some good pitchers going. And hopefully you win that series because you know it's going to be tough this weekend with the bottom of your rotation against the Dodgers. It's just going to be tough. It is. So winning this series against the Cubs, to me, is pretty important over the next 3 days.
No doubt, man. No doubt. It's got to get this thing going, got to get the ship righted, got to eat well at home. You know, these guys got to come out hungry tonight, and it's time for everybody to get going. Top of the order, I mean, you know, you can only say it so much. We need those guys to carry us. We need the stars to star here in San Diego, like they do in other places. And I realize, man, across the league, there's some guys that are scuffling right now that are highly paid. It's 12 games in, but, you know, to erase those memories of last year, if you don't want to be known as that team, then only you can change it. Like, only you can change the perception of you, right? And doing that means coming out tonight and putting the wood to this guy.
And don't forget, Wednesday's the Manny Machado home run bobblehead giveaway presented by Quidel Ortho to wrap up just a quick three-game homestand, and then it's off to L.A. to face the Dodgers. We are off for the rest of our day. Annie and Elston standing by. They will come up next. Great job by our executive producer and imaging director, Paul Reindl. For Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Monday from all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.